Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining me. My name is Russell Trafford-Jones and this is Broadcast Focus channel, where we talk to the people behind the industry to learn about technology and, well, the people at the heart of everything we do. Being based in the UK, as you can hear from my accent, it's no surprise that many of my friends and colleagues in the industry are from the UK or from North America or Western Europe. If you look at the submarine cable map of the world, we can see those same strong links in terms of bandwidth between UK, Europe and North America. And indeed, any English language channel on YouTube, wherever it may originally be based, will find a large chunk of viewership from the US. So making sure folks like me maintain a global viewpoint is one reason I'm very pleased to introduce Dr. Amal Panchihua, who joins me now from New Zealand. Hello, Amal.
Hello, Russell. Kia ora. That's the traditional way of sending greetings. Kia ora. So thank you for the invitation, and I'm looking forward to the discussion today.
It's fantastic. And so am I. And which part of New Zealand are you located in?
As some of you may know, sometimes a lot of people, they don't know, there's a country like New Zealand which exists close to the northern, southern hemisphere. We have two islands, North Island and South Island. So I live in North Island, but towards the southern part of the North Island, close to the official capital, which is called Wellington. But the city that I live in is called the Palmerston North. We call it Palmerston North. There's another Palmerston North in South Island. So we are called Palmerston North.
Got it. Good. Well, that's great. And you've been in New Zealand a long time.
We have been living 22 years since we migrated from Sri Lanka in 2002.
And a lot of that time's been at doing broadcast research. You have an affiliation with Massey University, is that right?
That's correct. Until very recent time, I had a very close link. So I still do have, but they have done a bit of a restructuring. But since we migrated to New Zealand in 2002, I worked as a senior academic and a researcher in the School of Engineering and Advanced Technology of Massey University, where we have the main campus in Palmerston North. And between 2002 and 2013, until the time when an organization headhunted me, and where I was then sort of given an opportunity to work globally for another organization.
And what was the research that you were undertaking at the university?
Russell, I'm really happy to tell you that because I'm proud to say that I'm a broadcast engineer, because sometimes it's hard to find broadcast engineers, especially broadcast engineers with much broader exposure. Because since I started my career in Sri Lanka, after my graduation in 1985, I worked 3 years for a IT company, one of the top organizations at that time. And I was just waiting to join our national television station, Sri Lanka Rupawahini Corporation, because having done my internship, I wanted to join the television industry. So how keen I was so determined that I wanted to go and join the national TV, where my IT organization probably didn't want to lose me either. But since that time, I had the exposure in the transmission areas. We did a lot of projects in IT. Actually, nowadays, what we call this metadata and all this automation. In 1989, we did some of the work, and they were very pioneering at that time in the Asia-Pacific region. So bringing those expertise, and they are also, I work for, after having done my master's in Netherlands, in the Philips Labs, in the Technical University of Eindhoven. On my return, I worked as a research engineer for the national TV and then joined my own university as a senior academic to have done quite a lot of research in those areas. So I brought all of that back here. So some of the research that I did with MASI in recent time, until very recent time, was around image and video compression, and also related to transmission and networking as well. So it's a nice blend of a number of those technologies that are required for broadcasting.
Yeah. And then you were also part of the ABU as well, is that right?
That's correct. So when I was working for Massey University as a senior academic at that time, I was recruited by Asia Pacific Broadcasting Union as a director of technology and innovation. So I was among one of the four top directors looking after four main functions: program, news, sports, and technology. So technical side. So I was the director of technology and innovation, which gave to spearhead not only in the Asia Pacific region, because we being a part of World Broadcasting Union, I was elected twice as the vice chair of the technical committee of the World Broadcasting Union. So that gave me a lot of opportunity to work with all other top engineers and colleagues who are in this industry, and also together with ITU, sort of harmonizing technologies as we are stepping into the more digital era.
So it's that experience, that not only global experience, but also Asia-specific, Asia-Pacific specifically, that I'm interested in talking about today. And your recent work, not only as an IT volunteer, but specifically with the AIBD, is really about sustainability in broadcast. The AIBD, I've just brought it up so everyone could see, the Asia-Pacific Institute for Broadcasting Development. So how would you describe your role there?
Yeah, so currently I'm functioning as a technical advisor and a consultant to AIBD. So AIBD is the Asia-Pacific Institute for Broadcasting Development, which was formed in 1970s. So it has been there for a long time, and really unique about this organization is it is an intergovernmental organization. So that was formed under the auspices of a number of UN organizations, UN ESCAP. ESCAP is for the our region, and also the UNESCO to promote, to develop human resources and to help policy formulation for the broadcast and media industry. So currently, most of us would realize, that technology has a very strong influence on broadcast and in the media industry. So I do provide sort of advice and consultancy for AIBD to achieve its goal as an intergovernmental organization, where a number of Asia-Pacific member countries from our region. It's not actually now limited to our region. We have members from African region, from Mauritius is a member like that, Seychelles. So we have members right across. And so we are working with all of them to achieve some of these common goals around our broadcast operation. One of the key challenges that we face today, which we haven't given enough emphasis in the past, is the sustainability. So I'm very happy to be a part of that, because I'm also an IET member, in the sense I'm a fellow of that one, chartered engineer. And also a volunteer in a number of roles, like a CPD advisor, mentor. And So when we are talking, like when you're talking about those things, even from our IED side, our IED vision and mission, our vision is to engineer a better world. And also in that one, we have identified what we call the societal challenges. And then among those five challenges, digital futures and sustainability, climate change are at the top. So they all go hand in hand with what I mentioned earlier. And also this can be connected with the themes of the same framework that we have at IET, where we are working with the people, digital, and then the future. So I think that's where I'm assisting AIBD to navigate its members to on this path. Actually, we are humbly proud what we are doing because we also closely work with the European Broadcasting Union. This year, when we had the what's called the Asia Media Summit, we had the person who is in charge of sustainability work at EBU presented at our summit. It's one of the top sort of meeting point, networking point, the summit. Presentation, we shared what the other regions are doing and what we are doing, what we plan to do. And so that was a very good start, which actually the start was in the previous year, in 2022, when we had the General Conference. General Conference is the conference where all the member countries, members get together and decide what's their future plan. So that's where I presented a concept paper that we need to start working on sustainability, because we did not pay enough attention in this area in the past. Today, it is not just a simple challenge to address, but it's also very well connected to their, what we call the business strategy, their operation, whether it can be a public service media or the commercial.
So what do we mean by sustainability in broadcast? Is it as relatively simple as understanding the carbon footprints and, you know, minimizing? Or, you know, is there, I guess there's always a little bit more. And I don't really mean talking about scope one, scope two, scope three. I mean, is there anything beyond looking at those, the carbon, that we need to be considering?
Like you highlighted, sometimes people think it's so simple, but it's so complex as well. So one of the problems around when we are addressing sustainability is the creating awareness among the broadcast and media sector stakeholders itself, because they need to be aware what is sustainability and why do we need to address this, because this is a very important component in every sector. So the broadcast sector or the media sector cannot exclude from that one. Now we just concluded the COP28 held in Dubai, and then so that also talk about certain things which has some bearings on us as well. I'll come to that a little later. But so the challenge is how we can explain, firstly, our own staff about what is sustainability. And then we need to understand them well, because as I see, the broadcasters has two challenges. One is for them to understand this issue and the challenges around that, and then to lead by example, because as broadcasters, most of the time what we do is we educate, we inform people. So we should lead by example. And so if we don't do that, so how can we tell other people to do something else where you are not following those guidelines? So I don't want to go into more sort of a technical definitions of sustainability, but sustainability goes to the bottom line of talking about so using resources, meeting the current needs, and then also make sure that the future generation could enjoy the similar environment in future, like what we are doing. So I think that's where we were not very conscious of that one. We were, we were a little ignorant on that. So we tried to consume a lot of resources around us, and then we never looked at the rate at which we are depleting them, or the while we are consuming those resources, what consequences they may have. Like you mentioned, it's the good way of looking at is what is the impact of while we are doing all of this on the climate? Because now a lot of people they themselves have realized that there is a truly a climate change. So and the science has proved that these are as a consequence of some of the man made action, action that we have performed led to these consequences. So we need to minimize. So one way to look at this we call what's called the carbon footprint. So the one of the key goals that we met in Delhi 2022 for our general conference was to work on initial things, like because you mentioned about scopes, initial things we can immediately do to mitigate, to minimize the impact on the carbon footprint. So it has a smaller carbon footprint, so that will have a lesser impact on the environment. And then sometimes the people misunderstand or misinterpret things. So they say, oh no, we need to make profit. Yeah, if it is a commercial broadcaster, certainly. Yeah, it does not mean that we are telling them not to make profit. But while they are making profit, they also should be aware of what impact they make on the society. Because the final outcome is this is for the betterment of human. So. Yeah. Like IET says, engineering a better world. So as engineers, we always find solutions for the problem. So let's say, look at, if we say, the energy generated by fossil fuel is not good, then we must have a different solution. So that's why we have worked on what we call the renewable energy, which has a very small carbon footprint while we are generating them.
So is there, what's the different situation that we would find? I mean, if we looked at the differences between the different countries which are part of or involved in the AIBD, what are the challenges that they're facing and how might they be different to European or North American challenges?
Now, to answer that question, Russell, I like to remind that when we are talking about broadcast and media, we need to consider the full value chain. That's from the production, the post-processing, and then the storage, distribution. It won't stop there, and the consumption as well. So that's at every point, there are implications to the climate change or the carbon footprint. So when we look at from the going digital, because we started the transition from analog to digital more than two decades ago. Now it's close to three decades. But if you look at in our region, there are still number of countries who are yet to even start the terrestrial transmission. And even some of the small countries have done this transition. So it's a very challenging situation. So I did a study in 2016 for ITU because ITU supported a number of countries preparing what we call the digital transition roadmaps at that time. But we found sometimes having done that, there was not much progress made. So I did a study for ITU, and then we shared that. So a few of the findings were, number one, because though I mentioned that some even the smaller countries have done analog to digital transition for television, but not every country, because the enormity of this project. Because when you look at like 2 decades ago, so at a given point in time, we had analog television. That analog television was not started at that time. It has evolved over a number of decades, because some of the television broadcasting was started in 1970s in certain countries. Some started even with the black and white, then they did the transition. Some countries straight away went into color. So it evolved over large number of years, which enabled them to build many transmitter stations, people to buy the devices, which is at that time only the television, to their living room. And so that's the kind of a status quo at that time. So when you are bringing a new change, which require new set of transmitters, sometimes at least add-on or a new device, there is a huge investment required. So that was a big challenge. The challenge we looked at was sometimes even the countries where they could have some level of capacity to do that, there wasn't sort of an interest either from the industry, or there was no interest coming from the industry nor from the government. So there was no sort of a political support, despite because it started there. You would remember it was started as an aim of not only gaining number of benefits going digital, but also what's called the digital dividend, because that brought a lot of money, funding, to the regulator, to the governments. Yeah. So some of the countries probably would have, they don't have that much of a demand for that, so they could not auction or they could not see that one. So like that, there are many challenges around that. But now, today, the situation has changed. And then it's more challenging bringing those changes. And because the technology is changing so rapidly, so sometimes even harder for broadcasters to keep in pace with those technologies. So they need to be very careful embracing the right technology, appropriate technology at the right time, not just for sake of being going for a new technology.
Financially, it can be very difficult. And it's an interesting point about the not everybody having the same demand for spectrum. Which does make sense. I remember fondly a talk at a radio tech con in previous years, where I think it was a number of different people from BBC, but there may be maybe a mix, who were pitching to say whether we should or shouldn't. It's kind of an academic exercise, but nonetheless brought up some interesting questions about whether we should be trying to go fully streaming or fully not streaming for radio. And some of the maths is fairly simple, and it's already playing out in a certain sense. Increasing numbers of AM transmitters are being turned off in the UK, and if you think about the megawatts required for long wave, it's clearly a lot of energy. So the more people move away from these technologies, then the more it makes sense to turn them off if at all possible. So it strikes me that some of the countries you'll be working with have got like all of the options on, like the ones that have started the digital transition have got terrestrial digital, but they've also got analog still, so that usually takes more power. But of course, they will also be doing exactly what everyone else is doing and increasingly using the internet to deliver. So it'd be interesting to get some thoughts from you about that difficulty of turning things off, where obviously, you know, if you think about perhaps all of the scope one and two and three emissions that you could be saving, perhaps one or two transmitters or a whole fleet of transmitters, perhaps that's not where a lot of the energy is. But on the other hand, it seems like a really, you know, good way to go, and you know, simple, it's motivating, and you should be able to get some benefit from moving everybody over to the new technologies. So that must be a really difficult balancing act and for countries to consider.
Definitely, yeah. I think on those lines, I have read and I have analyzed and written many articles around some of the research done comparing the energy consumption for what we call the over-the-air broadcasting services. So BBC Research has done a number of studies around that for radio, since you mentioned about the radio, and I remember when I was sort of part of DAB Plus, some of the workshops in the Asia Pacific, we shared some of these insights where how energy efficient is the over-the-air broadcasting compared to the online delivery. And also it's not just only the energy part, but also I'll come to that in television side soon, but in radio itself, other than the energy, the most important part is that for you to receive that radio broadcast, you don't have to pay anything. Because if it is a streaming, definitely you need to have a broadband connection. So a broadband connection means you must have you must pay to a ISP to get a reasonable broadband, because depending on your listening hours, so you must have that capacity. And also the other difficulty is that what happens when you not at home. So let's say while you are driving, because most of the studies even today have proven that most of the radio listening happen in the vehicle. So when people are driving, that's the time they listen to a lot of radio. And at the moment, it's hard to get what we call the connected vehicles because I like to connect this to one of the questions you mentioned about our region. The ITU studies, because ITU had some goals earlier in the few years ago to make sure that everyone is connected globally. But unfortunately, I think in the latest study has shown nearly 62% of people have some level of connectivity, but that level of connectivity is not good enough to consume media. And that's globally, global average. But if you look at our regional average, it's a little poor, because there are countries where the internet penetration or access to broadband is not as good as in another country. And I also read some of the reports from Ofcom in UK. Yeah, UK is a well-developed country, but still people have the choice. Sometimes a lot of people who lived in certain region they say, no, I don't want the broadband. I don't want that. So they may probably have other ways of receiving information through radio or television, but they don't want broadband. That's their choice. So we need to honor that. So then in that situation, how can we communicate to those people? And you just mentioned about one of the recent incident, but I like to go a little beyond that, 2019, the COVID time. So it's globally, even many studies, we have done studies mm-hmm. at AIBD, and we have a lot of discussion. Even AIBD took part in one of the ITU workshops to Asia Pacific, what's called the future of television. And then all the members said, yeah, our television services, one is the one which helped all our nations to go through that difficult time, because they wanted to communicate how people should behave, how they should isolate, what they should do and they shouldn't. So yeah, it's as good as having the vaccination or other things. So the point is that whether sometimes the connectivity is not available, even when there is connectivity available, people are not making that choice, then we should have a way of communicating. So the challenge is then how we can make sure that this distribution, getting this information to people, because when we say people, like every country, every government has a responsibility to communicating some of the important vital information to them. This is very important at a time of crisis like COVID-19. So that those channels should be available. So when we are talking about one of the terms, sometimes even in one of my recent article, someone was questioning what is linear, because linear is very simple. It is prescribed. It is scheduled. So mm-hmm. so the linear television or linear radio can be either over the air or could be streaming. Like I know that now in UK you have freely. Mm-hmm. I think it's a collection of all the free-to-air broadcasters that mm-hmm. are streaming their services through that one. So even in New Zealand, the public service broadcast, TVNZ, all their services are available, the three channels are available streaming and for the commercial ones as well. But they are not yet talking about switching off any of the linear channels, because at the moment there are sizable population still tuning to the over-the-air, because it is the best quality assured. And so it relates to, like, in a technical sense, quality of service or the quality of experience. But as we are developing various technologies around to make the online delivery better for streaming, maybe adaptive bitrate, multicasting, all those things, still cannot yet beat the over-the-air broadcasting, because that's like the gold standard. But again, I like to bring this point to answer your question, because the question is around like we made the transition from analog to digital. Is it now time to make the transition from over-the-air to like a online only delivery? So I use the term online only. So if it is online only, then there has to be some alternatives for those who cannot access online. And also when we had the over-the-air, our broadcaster systems are very robust, very resilient. So we have so much backup. If a transmitter fails, then there's another backup operation. So what's going to happen, given situation, if the we lose the connectivity. So then the people are completely get disconnected. I like to remind, like in New Zealand, we had unusual floods. They call it a 100-year occurrence floods, but it happened 4 times within 3 months. Same region, they suffered very much. And then what was the message from the disaster management authority was, tune to your radio, home radio. Go to your car and on the radio and listen, because the cell towers were washed off, or the power, even the power stations was underwater. So this is the level of sort of uncertainty around some of the climate change disasters we could see. So we anticipate, based on studies, these occurrences will be severe as we go along if we don't take mitigative action, and their frequency will increase too. So, so that's what we observe. So that in that sense, it is harder to completely switch off all the over-the-air broadcasting. But there may be like if you are doing 3-4 channels, we can reduce that to just one. So that way, the energy we use for 4 channels can be reduced to one channel. That one linear channel over there will deliver all the vital information.
It should be stronger, potentially.
Yeah, it should be stronger. And still, we are in the process of actually studying, because when this question came up, do we want? Because I think this was discussed in UK too. Because when the Director General made a statement to say that like we wish to go online only in future. I mean, that's probably the goal of every broadcaster. But that how soon we could go, it depends on how soon we can make a more robust and resilient connectivity to everyone. It's like the mobile, because the mobile that we enjoy today is not just came out. I remember when I was working for National TV, it's like about a brick size mobile we had, and that's just to make a voice call. But it's different today. So it's evolved over 3 decades. So that it requires time. So the work that's happening around streaming, we are now studying, trying to compare and then try to understand the energy requirement, because that's like you mentioned, it comes under scope 2, because it's indirect but downstream. And we are working on the direct ones at the productions, for which we have actually, because this is another thing I advocate in all my work. I mean, it's everyone does it, working in the sustainability, but that's my key message. Try to measure your impact. Unless you measure, you don't know how much impact you are making. So how do you measure? So there are well-established calculators to do that.
Yeah, I think it's interesting that you brought up the idea of or the conversation about mobile phones, because obviously, it is critical that we have systems which are resilient. And I think your points about the fact that currently networking is something you buy, and so you can't really be forced to have a data connection, so to speak. But on the other hand, that simply then puts the question, in my mind at least, well, is there a way of actually giving a network connection to people who haven't necessarily kind of gone out and bought a data plan? And one of the new things that I think in possibly the next release of 5G that they're talking about is having the ability to have a one-directional, unidirectional 5G signal that goes into the phone. Of course, that then is only that's only limited by the ability the power at the mast, whereas normally, obviously, it would be on your phone. So that would have to go to a local transmitter. So, you know, it makes me wonder whether, as part of 5 or 6G, we will end up perhaps having this ability to kind of give a network signal to equipment that people have already got. Because the other problem is, if you've still got an FM radio in your shed, that's great. But if nobody's listening to FM, chances are they've got nothing that can listen to FM because they don't use it. So there's not really any point in holding on to these old transmitters if people are no longer going to be using those devices. So given that people will still have phones or computers and things like that, then, you know, that's just one option, I guess, which kind of gets around the, you know, the well-heard criticism of delivery to the home. Well, what happens if, you know, there aren't any cables, or, you know, this has been washed down the landscape? So I guess if you are going to consider the you know, 5G infrastructure or certain ones as critical, then you could at least make certain masts more resilient, both physically and in terms of connectivity and power. But no, it only goes back to one of your original comments, which just is like, if you think about the amount of work and the amount of money that needs to go into these things, it has to be a gradual move, really, for most economies, at least.
That's right. Since you brought up the media consumption on portable device, which is what we call your smartphone or your mobile device. Over the years, we have had very wonderful technologies, starting from media flow, DVB-H, and various ATSC-M and so on, or ISDB-TMMM. So that's ISDB-TMMM, the multimedia broadcasting in Japan, was the only sort of a broadcasting that happened in the world, only in Japan for a short period of time, but that also stopped due to non-profitability. So what the point I want to emphasize here is that, because the 5G come as a 5G come as the sort of a distribution technology, but that also now linked with the device. So we need to see, is there enough number of people who are ready to consume this media broadcasting on a mobile device? Otherwise, if there's a lack of devices, it will not.
Sure, of course.
No sustenance, yeah.
Yeah, that goes without saying, and you know, look, it takes time, absolutely. But you know, I guess the point is, if we're willing to go as far as to say we should abandon the idea of delivery over data, then also online, I guess, then that's fine. Then we just have to deal with the consequence, and the consequence is we're going to have to keep some, you know, transmitter system going. Which is specific to broadcasting, and then we just have to say, right, well, we'll do what we can to to make that efficient, sustainable, but we just are going to have to we accept the fact that we're going to use that energy. And of course, you know, the whole of broadcasting, you know, has got that caveat behind it. You know, we need to have an entertained culture and civilization, so we have to accept that we're doing something that isn't absolutely strictly necessary. Although, of course, you know, if everybody's depressed, then it isn't necessary. So there's always that kind of weird, it's like, well, okay, well, we're going to put on some reality TV, but we're going to do it sustainably. So, you know, the challenge is, well, don't do it. Well, that's just a given. So given that we're doing that, we then have to say, right, well, it's either a transmitter network, one at a minimum, but hopefully only one, plus online people can also receive it, rather than going that extreme and trying to kind of go for online only, which
you're right, because many times this has been discussed, and like throughout my sort of my in my opinion, I see this as a multi-platform delivery. But the problem is, when you're operating multi-platform, that means you are spending money on many platforms, so and energy, and then more impact. But you probably need to balance everything. Like I mentioned, if you're doing five linear channels, so you may reduce that to one linear channel, which is more general, but all the specialized ones are kept on online, or they are supplemented or complemented through 5G broadcasting. So because the one of the biggest question at this moment is can the 5G or is there another distribution technology which could sort of replace the current generation? But if you look at like DVB as organization, which has quite a sizable market globally, they say, no, we are not going to further develop any terrestrial because we are come close to the sort of theoretical limits, but we are trying to make sure that everyone could access more seamlessly. So that's access is agnostic to the network. And every day, now the current biggest problem is, so when you are addressing this, like from engineering point of view or from mathematical point of view, this is a multidimensional problem. So how do you make sure that you serve all your audience? Because there's a kind of responsibility if it is a public service media broadcaster. If it is a commercial broadcaster, they would like to have the biggest market share. So how they could do that the best way, but they need to minimize the investment, the cash outlay, and then also the impact on the climate change. Because when you run more and more data centers unnecessarily, or when you run transmitters just for few audience, that's not efficient. But also there are other sort of a requirement, like you mentioned, unless we find an alternative way of getting those information to people who are not connected, so we need to come up with those solutions. So this is almost similar. So every time when I discuss or when I tell them, I tend to take a example from some other situation. So if you look at when we are doing the analog to digital transition for just for normal television, let's say, we also again came across some of the people who are unable to buy even a set-top box. So in many countries, including in New Zealand, so those people were provided with a set-top box initially. That's the way to go forward, because we just cannot say, or just because you don't have, we cannot do it. No, we will make sure that everyone who can do on their own, let's do it, and then the others will be supported initially to go on those paths.
Just to close out, I'll just not to pick on Sky, but Sky have. Sky are one of the most progressive, to my knowledge, commercial organizations who have very strong environmental targets. And for that reason, they're documenting their energy usage in their reports and their kind of corporate reports. So for 2022, Sky Group's energy use was 367,000 megawatt hours. So that's a lot. But of course it is. I mean, it's across three countries, and everything they're doing is absolutely on their way to reducing that. Very strong work being done in going to remote production, for instance, and not having people driving around. So we're talking about, you know, the different scopes now. And the reason I bring this up, not just because it's an interesting statistic, but it's to show that you know, I'm sure that if they shut off all of their satellite amplifiers and things like that, and turned off their set-top boxes, well, I don't know, perhaps the set-top boxes, but if you turned off all the transmitters, you know, that energy usage, in my heart, I feel it's not going to come down that much. Absolutely, where they're putting their efforts is across the whole chain, and and the more they can bring things together in one unified infrastructure, then you know the more efficient that will be. So I think absolutely where we need to reduce our energy usage, then we should. And if that is in having a better, more modern, more efficient transmission infrastructure, then that's great. But as I'm sure most of the work that you're doing with them, with the member nations, you know, it's about the whole story, and it only gets more complex the further out you go, and probably to an extent becomes a more global question, of course, with the global supply chains in the media world, and of course with cloud infrastructure, wherever that comes into the equation.
Yeah, I recently, very quickly, I recently read the UK is planning to bring in 2026 the controls over the scope 3. So in for all sectors where there will be a tax, there will be a carbon tax. So that will sort of facilitate more drive within your organization to do many things, and then unless we are aware of what are the sources of these bad things to make a carbon footprint bigger, we need to measure, we need to have an idea. So that's what we are doing in our region. Rather than not having any start, but making a start, because it's better to do early, and especially when you are planning any new building, any new facility, or any program planning. So these need to be incorporated into that one. And then unless you measure, unless you compare, and this will be a competitive thing. And also now it's globally becoming the reporting also part of important thing, so that will bring the consumer, the audience, also aware of. When we go to buy a electric appliance, we know, oh, this is energy efficient, so they have a kind of an energy efficient rating. So similar thing.
Indeed. Look, we need to stop now. I've really enjoyed speaking to you, so thank you very much. Now, I like to think that I leave a kindly impression on people I meet, the friends I spend time with, and of course the families that I care about. But I don't know if you've ever found this, Amal, but the older I've gotten, I get fewer and fewer Christmas presents. So as this is a young channel, and I'd like to start reversing that trend. So if you could give me a Christmas present, subscribe and like the video, then that would be fantastic. Now, if you want to do that for me, then that's great. But if not, at least do it for Amal, and because I want to certainly thank him very sincerely for spending time and exploring this topic. It's been fascinating. And thank you very much, Amal.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you for the opportunity. Nice talking to you.
Nice talking to you too. Bye-bye.